Here we are live at Henry Ford Community College from WHFR Dearborn. And now our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views from Henry Ford Community College. My name is Jay Koronek, host of the show. Remember that any opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, students, administrators, what have you, although usually we hope so. Today we're going to be covering with several stories and a couple of special guests the whole funding issue for education in our state, and specifically the funding we're hoping for, a funding maintenance or at least a rebate, a reimbursement from what's happened in the last month or so. With me in the studio are our news director, Dennis Reimars, who is with us today, as well as Amy Powers. How are you guys doing? This is mic check time, of course.
Hi, Jay. How are you?
Hey, we're great.
Just fine. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Amy. And Amy is here with our special guest from the PTSA. And Amy, take it away. Do the introduction, and let's find out what our guest knows.
Well, today we have a special guest in the studio, Colette Dunsmore, Dearborn PTSA, that's Parent Teacher Student Association Council President. Welcome, Colette.
Hi, thank you.
First of all, tell us, what is a PTSA?
Basically, what you just said is the Parent Teacher Student Association, mostly run by parents, but the students come into play in sixth grade from middle school on up to high school. We are nationwide, statewide, and, of course, district-wide. We have 25 local units here in Dearborn at 25 of our schools. I think we're missing just a few that don't have a PTA or a PTSA. And we do a lot of legislative activities trying to make things better for the students and give them a proper education. That's some of the things that we do.
Okay. Well, I'd like to backtrack a little because as council president of the PTSA, you helped engineer not one but two trips already to Lansing to address concerns about the per-student funding cuts, once in October, again November 10th. Mm-hmm. You were with about three busloads of concerned parents, and you brought up a petition to restore, was it 20J funding?
Yes, that's correct.
Tell us a little bit about the trip and what was accomplished.
The trip was designed so that we could make a stand and show Lansing that we want the funding back, that we mean business. Parents, when they go and they say something, most people will listen to us. Not always, but they try to. And so the PTAs covered the bus trip. So the buses did not get paid for by the school district. A lot of people seem to think that's the case, but that was not the case. We did cover that ourselves. And we had about 150 or so people. Most of them were parents. There's a few people from the administration office, but not as, maybe three. And I think maybe a couple people that were employed by DPS, but, you know, it was, like I said, it was all mostly parents. We went up there. We did do a rally out in front of the building along with several other school districts. So there's probably 500 to 1,000 total people there.
People from other Hold Harmless districts?
Correct. Okay. Yeah. There was, it was mostly designated for the 20J funding cuts. There was 43 school districts that were cut this funding, and each district had a different amount. We were the second highest cut next to Livonia, who was cut about $1,000 more, but it still equals out to almost $5 million.
You brought up petitions. How many people had a chance to sign that?
You know what? I'm going to take a guess. It was a pretty good stack. We're thinking about, you know, like maybe 4 inches thick. It was a very, very, very big stack. And so I'm going to guess probably 1,000 to 2,000 signatures were on those petitions that we dropped off.
And who'd you hand that off to?
We gave it to our representative, Gino Polidori, and we also handed him a stack about an inch thick of papers written by students at O.L. Smith Middle School, asking obviously the same thing that the petitions were asking for, which was for to reinstate our funding and what it would do to them if we lost teachers. And then we also handed a scroll that I don't even know how long this scroll was, but it was originated by a parent at Snow Elementary, and she went around to every single class and had all the students sign the scroll, and these are elementary students, and asking for funding back. So it was big.
You're planning on heading back there as soon as the session, as soon as they go back in session.
Yes, that's correct.
When's that? We're
going up actually December 2nd. The Michigan PTSA is putting on a statewide what they call bake sale for education, and every PTA is asked to in somewhere in their local community or in their school to do a bake sale from 11 to 2 on that day, and take that money and put it towards something that we're losing in each school.
Did you say a bake sale?
A bake sale. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, as much as we, you know, people seem to think that's all PTA is bake sale. Well, we're going to use that to our advantage. And yeah, we do bake sales, but we're going to be doing that, and the different councils across the state are going up to Lansing and actually doing the bake sale in the Capitol building, so we're going to be doing that there as well.
All right. Do you need a permit for that?
I believe they have that all set up.
Well, we're looking at I'm looking here at the Times Herald from this week, and apparently when you visited Gino Polidori, our representative from Dearborn in Lansing, he wasn't real optimistic. In fact, his quote here in the Times Herald, which wasn't in the press guide, and folks, that's a reason to read both papers, mm-hmm. He said he was trying to work with his Republican colleagues to get the school's money back, but it's been a trying task so far. He said, I couldn't get anyone to say they would support me in a tax increase. Now, I don't quite understand that. Obviously, we're just looking for the money, but apparently, of course, there's no money in the state. I mean, it's a deficit situation. They were trying to balance the budget. And so I guess he's saying, is this what you understand, Colette, is that unless there is a tax increase, they can't reestablish those funds. How do you remember that, or what do you think?
There's actually several different things going on here. There is a bill that passed the House that basically used some of our stimulus money and a couple other things that they were able to work out to make it so that we could get some of our funding back, which would reinstate us about half of our funding. What happened with that is it's now in the Senate, and it sits there, and it's not being passed. It's just sitting there idle, and of course they're not in session, so it's literally sitting there idle, and the cutoff date is this Saturday, the 30-day mark to reinstate the money. So if they do anything with it on December 1st, they do. If they don't, it's pretty much a done deal. What he's talking about is a way to fund education permanently.
Yes, of course.
And unfortunately, that might be the way to do it. I don't pretend to know exactly what they can do up there, but I do know that they need to do something to fund education permanently in the future, or else every year we're going to be doing this again. And they do say that next year we're looking at another $600 per pupil cut per district again, which will equal another 300 layoffs. This is exactly what we're going through right now.
So let me just restate, and we're talking to Colette Dunsmore, who is the council president. Is that a voluntary position?
Yeah, it is totally voluntary.
Well, we love volunteers here because almost all of our staff, except myself, are volunteers. Our news team are all volunteers, and that may have to be the way of the world in the future, since nobody can ever get paid for anything. We have to run this place without getting paid. Nonetheless, you know, secure funding is an issue. But the current status is then the House has passed a bill, at least to reestablish this 20J money, that is the rich districts that already are collecting extra money by taxpayer permission to fund the schools, are not getting it back. It was cut out by, I understand, X'd out by Governor Granholm in the last round of budget cuts. But she has said that if she got a bill passed, ha ha ha, from the legislature, that means the House and the Senate agreeing on the same words, that she would sign it to reestablish at least the 20J part.
Yeah.
But of course, the Senate is under the control of the Republicans in a majority. And so I don't know if Gina was referring to Republicans in the House, or because that's who he relates to as a House representative's mm-hmm. person himself, or the Republicans in the Senate. We hope to have an interview here on this show with at least the spokesperson for Senator Bishop, the Republican majority leader in the Michigan Senate next Friday. We'll see what happens. That may be after the fact or whatever. But you say the bill that was sent from the House to the Senate will expire this Saturday, tomorrow. Or is it a week from tomorrow?
No, actually, it would be tomorrow. What it is there's a 30-day grace period from the time that the veto went through, that the Jennifer Granholm slashed the 20J funding.
Okay.
And she also reduced across the state $127 per pupil.
Right.
Those two things are up and can be reinstated by tomorrow, but they're not there.
But that would take like 2/3 vote?
Right.
To override her veto.
I don't know if it's 2/3 or if it's half. I'm not sure. Oh. I don't know. I just know it passed the House. Unfortunately, I don't know that exact detail. But
we'll see if, and again, if we're lucky enough to have Representative Andy Dillon, who's supposed to be in touch with us at the halfway point of the show, we'll see what he knows about this. Government and the way that bills are passed into law and go to committee and back and forth, sometimes it can be rather complex, and everybody would like to know, especially here in Dearborn and the other districts, what money really will they have left. They know they're going to have a lot less than they thought they'd have at the start of the school year and at the end of August and September. So what would you like us to specifically ask Andy Dillon?
Well, I have my note here. but I just want to say that bill that they're trying to pass is only half of our 20J funding. It's not the whole amount.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's only $2.5 million for us, and that's the $127 per pupil.
Additional.
That they cut
anyway, which is not even under discussion of being reestablished.
Right, and the original $163 that they cut from us is gone. Like, that is totally off the table.
Sure.
And this is, there's only, like I said, 43 districts that get the 20J funding.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it was voted on. So we are paying in so that we can do that. We are also a donor district where we donate $14 million back to the state to help fund other school districts. So that was part of our offset, was that 20J.
It seems to be extremely unfair. I know, difficult budget times for everybody. Mm-hmm. But as we said on this show, or I've said anyway in the past, if they want to phase out that sort of extra money from a district and give us exactly only what the other districts get, and therefore we should only pay what the other districts are paying in terms of property taxes, then give us 3 years or 5 years to phase it out. I mean, to just cut it out when we've already paid. Our Dearborn taxpayers are already paying in that extra amount because they wanted to. They wanted to help their schools, and now the state's not even giving it back to us.
Right.
Now, that's just totally wrong. That's just that should be illegal, darn it. And I know that... is there any legal grounds? Do you have any legal advice that you can sue the state or something over this?
I would love to be able to do that.
Okay. Have any lawyers in your group or no?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I'd love to be able to say, oh, I'm sorry, we can't pay you that $14 million, but
Well, it's already being paid.
It's
of course.
Paid. Yeah.
They're already collecting it since July 1st.
Yeah. So my question to Andy Dillon is: what are your plans to fund education for next year so we don't have to go through this again?
Absolutely.
And that is my biggest beef.
Okay. Well, we commend you highly for your volunteer efforts at the head of the PTSA. Obviously, all of these issues, all education in Michigan, are state issues, really. We'd like them to be maybe local issues in terms of our control over, our schools directly. But without the money, you don't have much control when there's nothing left to control.
Right.
I had just a final comment before we move on the show, but besides commending you on your efforts and your continuing efforts, is there anything other people in Dearborn can do? Are you doing another petition?
Yeah, we're not doing a petition. What we're doing is a letter writing campaign. We were going to, obviously, we're including our local, our rep, which
Gino
is Polidori,
Gina Polidori,
and then our senator, which is Irma Clark Coleman.
Okay.
We included Andy Dillon in that because he is the Speaker of the House, and, of course, Senator Bishop, who is a majority leader in the Senate, and, of course, Jennifer Granholm, our governor.
Right. So even if they've already done emails or written letters,
I would recommend
do it again.
Keep doing it.
Every day.
Their phone lines, flood their emails, and send a letter asking, for them to make funding for education priority number one in the state instead of not. Obviously, it doesn't seem like they care about funding for education, so let's make it worth it. Like, make it. You know, this is important to everybody. Well, these are our future. The kids are our future, and if you're not going to fund them now, you'll be funding them later in other ways.
And folks, you can get the email addresses and the phone numbers. Well, you could call City Hall in Dearborn if you want, if you love calling your City Hall or the Dearborn Board of Ed, certainly, Dearborn Superintendent's Office. But you can also go to the website, mi.gov, and then you can click on House of Representatives and find your district. And if you don't know what district you're in, they'll help you and so on. And all the email addresses, all the phone numbers are there. Mm-hmm. And so every day, folks, just put on your list things to do today until they help support education. And in fact, give back the money, the extra money that Dearborn's already given them. Okay, that 20J issue is particularly rankling to me. But I also wanted to mention here is that Polidori states about why he can't get Republican support. He says everybody's worried about re-election right now. What re-election is it? Next year's re-election?
Oh, sure, with all the term limits. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Polidori is out of office. He's term limited.
But
Granholm's,
I mean,
term limited. Andy Dillon is term limited. Is it Bishop? Will
Bishop
he be gone too?
I think so.
Okay. Why don't they just, if they're not worried about, why should they be worried about their re-election? They're going to be gone. Why don't they just do the right thing? I mean, straighten this out. And by the way, I greatly respect Michael Moore, and he had an editorial in the Traverse City local paper last weekend. He said, you know, the answer to this, yeah, is more taxes. Of course, you got to get revenue going. Make it a graduated income tax. In fact, it only has to be exactly the same one that was in place before Engler became governor. Okay? Did we have rich people in Michigan complaining about that at that time? No. Okay, so it's, you know, and most of us say, oh, gee, I remember taxes 8 or 10 years ago, and it wasn't that bad for any. Okay, that's it. The same thing. Put that back in, and we'll have enough money for the schools and a few other things.
We actually had a surplus before England came in.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, that's.
But that's a, you know.
Yeah,
that's
we don't want to be partisan.
No, that's just a fact. It's
yeah,
not partisan.
And of course, a graduated income tax, folks, yes, it means that if you make more money, you have to pay more in taxes. But even, I love Steve Forbes and Warren Buffett and others that say, we're ready to pay. So
well,
write us a
three.
Couple billion dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill Gates hasn't said that yet, although he's still donating to certain charter schools in the U.S. But we need a way to securely fund the schools no matter what the economic times. I mean, Dearborn has these wonderful provisions, and some people in the city council and even the mayor was sort of fighting them for a while, but the popular support says secure staffing of police and fire, no matter what. Minimum number of full-time people. Wow, what a concept if we could do that for the schools. You know, and it's not just you know, the minimum staffing of the schools, but how can we keep losing 60 to 100 teachers every year with the same number of kids or more? Dearborn is actually an expanding in population.
Yes.
So we almost need, and next year would be the time when we get a constitutional convention together, if our elected representatives are so chicken and so worried about re-election when they're going to get their heads cut off in after three terms anyway, or two terms if you're governor, to do the right thing, maybe we've got to change the constitution of the state to demand secure funding of the schools, whatever. Thank you, Colette, for the update, and we'll try to ask the key questions and your question to Representative Dillon later today.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for coming on our journal show. I've got a couple of comments from Jim Hightower, our friendly progressive spokesperson, today for today's show. I'm just going to do one of them right now. It's a teaser, the second one. The first one is about economic indicators. Are we better off or worse off? It depends on who you're asking. So we'll be right back with more of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views here, right after this comment from Jim Hightower. Pay attention. He's a smart person.
How's our economy doing? Most economists, media outlets, and politicos judge economic performance by such statistical indicators as the Dow Jones average. Aren't there better indicators than stock prices? Forbes.com has found several that it says could be more accurate. such as the size of restaurant garbage piles. The bigger the pile, the better. For more garbage indicates more customers, says Forbes analysts, who report that things are picking up from last year's severe downturn, with garbage now amassing to the telltale point that, quote, this summer it was stinky again. I think Forbes is onto something by using sociological observations to determine economic well-being. But love the rich bias causes it to overlook even more telling indicators of how things are going for the unrich. For example, its stinky index would have been enhanced by a count of the number of people rummaging through those garbage bins to find something to eat. Forbes also put a lot of stock in the autumn sale of wines at Christie's, the Tony Auction House. Wine bidders, reports a Christie official, are often speculators looking to buy low and sell high. At this year's autumn wine auction, sales nearly doubled last year's low volume, a clear sign of an improving economy, Forbes tells us. Well, maybe for the swells who are into wine speculation, but what about ordinary folks who buy wine to, you know, drink? A good measure of their status might be in whether the buyers of Two Buck Chuck have moved up to some of the $5 wines. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Forbes indicators are fun, but like the Dow Jones average, they miss the economic realities experienced by the workaday American majority. That's why I think we need a Doug Jones average. Yeah, an index to tell us how Doug and Darlene are doing. Now that'd be economic information worth knowing.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
We're back with more of the new WHFR Journal, the station making waves, WHFR.fm. My name is Jay Koronick, and happy to be with you today. And we're going to see if Representative Andy Dillon we'll have further information about the education funding of Michigan coming up in just a few minutes. But until then, Dennis Reimar is my WHFR news director, and I are going to talk about some of the other headline stories here. Maybe you'd want to just summarize quickly. The Press and Guide this week had the headline, the top story on the first page, about the conference center plans for Dearborn moving forward. It helps if I turn your microphone on.
I thought there was a message there. No. You know, and this is something, it was the top story on that particular issue of the paper. At the same time, I think, you know, you and I agreed that the meeting's actually coming up on the 30th, and it really didn't advance the story all that much other than to say, hey, we think this is still a good idea. Of course, there are people against this idea.
Right.
And even the city council president, Mr. Tom Tofalsky, had said, and this is a great quote, the last thing we want to do is get started with something that we can't pay for. And he said, again. And in reference to this, we're talking about a conference center. I think it's 9 acres is set aside. It would be near the Hyatt Regency. And it would expand on the current situation with available space and go from the capacity of 600 to 700, which is what the Hyatt offers, to 1,000 to 1,200. It would top out at 1,200.
Yeah, it's one big auditorium. There might be some other meeting rooms in the plan. That's why they don't know if it's 22 to 26 or 28 million, but because they can work that out later. And the Severstal money, that is the Russian owned steel mill here in Dearborn, is seed money. And just to be careful, Tofalsky is saying we could set up a special fund so that it doesn't get folded in and lost or spent for something else, just to put that $8.5 million in as seed money, and then other money can come in later. So they're trying to move forward, folks. We don't have any, as Dennis said, this issue has not moved forward other than, well, the next step is to have a big meeting and see if we can get the additional money. Most of the hotels seem to agree that larger auditorium or a conference center that would be close to all of their operations there at Fairlane Town Center would, and in fact, all the hotels in Dearborn, too, for that matter.
Absolutely.
In West Dearborn, it would help all of them if there's a really big multi-day conference that would need that kind of space. I personally think it's a heck of a lot of money, but I'm sure it'll be beautiful outfitting and cushy chairs and great sound systems. Often it's not, by the way, folks.
Gone to, and come in on budget.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good point.
And be built quickly, because the sooner the better if you're going to accept these things. What we really need $20 to $30 million for is the high-speed new train center, the Intermodal Transportation Center in West Dearborn. That's really what we need $30 million for first. That would even help the conference center.
Well, that's exactly.
So if anybody has, you know, an extra $20 to $30 million in their pocket and want to put their name on something, I'd suggest the train station, okay, first. And I think the city probably knows that that may be, you know, tying the transportation routes together like that with high-speed rail. Imagine if we could actually have high-speed rail here, not just from Chicago, but New York City and all points east. But that's not in the plans for quite a while. But that plan is like, unfortunately, in terms of raising money, is like 10 years away from getting the new train station, and they have to identify the money for that. But I think the local richer hotels, the Hyatt and or the Ritz-Carlton here, may make sizable contributions, because it would only benefit them directly to have this, you know, for marketing for their situation.
We could let Severstal name the train.
Right.
Because their money was going for naming rights.
So in terms of Representative Dillon, we're calling him or he's calling us?
No, he should be calling in within the next 5 minutes.
We'll look for the flashing light here. Everybody stare at that and let me know if I don't see it.
I always fall asleep.
Yeah, okay. The other story is going on here. I'll briefly summarize that in Dearborn Heights, we don't forget Dearborn Heights, they're right next to Dearborn, they had a discrimination suit filed by their former director of development, who is saying that he was fired because he was an Arab American, so he's charging discrimination. Well, they've just hired another Arab American to that position, but they actually thought that was the whole idea at the outset. They actually sort of identified it. I don't know if in writing of the original job descriptions, but anyway, they appointed already, because they need a development director, every city does, Ron Amen, who formerly, besides having other jobs in the area for different groups and municipalities, was more immediately the former director, operations director, for the Arab American National Museum here in Dearborn. So congratulations to Ron Amen, and hopefully the city of Dearborn Heights will be well served by your ability. It seems like they've sort of undercut the discrimination suit, but I'm not a lawyer. As we've recommended to all of our listeners, wait until the courts decide it, folks. Don't jump to conclusions about either the city of Dearborn Heights or the mayor, who was specifically mentioned, I think, in any of these things. Until all the sides are heard fairly in a court of law, if it gets that far. But I'm just saying, they have a new development director and a person who had been helping to manage the Arab American National Museum in Dearborn very successfully for the last couple of years. And so congratulations, Ron Amen. Little update on an event in Dearborn, which is somewhat controversial maybe, although maybe not as much as before. There's going to be a marijuana legalization rally. It's planned for tomorrow, November 21st, right here in Dearborn at Dearborn City Hall, just to get the attention of all of our elected officials. Of course, they won't be there. Right. It's Saturday, but somebody might be there at 3 p.m., folks. And Bruce Kane, and he's not affiliated, according to the story in the Dearborn Press and Guide, with any particular group. But, of course, why should marijuana be legalized? Well, there's medical reasons, first of all. And I don't know the extent or the exact proposal that Bruce is supporting, but if you wanted more information, you could just go over there. I'm sure they have handouts, and you could find out more at 3 p.m. tomorrow at Dearborn City Hall, the marijuana legalization rally. This is a very important medical issue for people that have cancer and have received cancer treatments and are in a great deal of pain. Marijuana, if legally dispensed by appropriate doctors, is definitely a way to ameliorate that pain and help those people that have to suffer the terrible treatments and or the terrible disease itself.
I think it might have to do with the growing of marijuana for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's already legal?
Yes.
Right.
For medicinal purposes.
Is it already legal?
Absolutely.
In Michigan?
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the problem is, of course, if it goes through, there's so many in California, there's so many problems with the legalization. I mean, they have to have, like, apparently legal farms that are monitored and fenced and government controlled, and that raises the price. I mean, it's a simple plant that even in Michigan can be grown easily, maybe indoors under certain kinds of light.
This could be part of the green technology.
Yes,
absolutely.
Coming to Michigan.
Right. Well, look at the various uses for hemp. The actual plant, the fabric used in fabric.
And that's illegal to grow, which...
Right. Yeah. Even
I think it's another issue they're addressing.
Henry Ford the First experimented. He had a hemp field before it was illegal in the 1930s out in, I think, South Dakota or North Dakota, just for Ford Motor Company. Mm-hmm. He was growing it, and they were testing it for automobile upholstery uses. But he rejected it, not because you could smoke it in your spare time. I mean, hemp once produced, you can't smoke the rope, okay, the fibers, folks. But he rejected it as a businessman because it was too darn long-lasting. And people wouldn't want to buy a new car if their upholstery was in good shape. Mm-hmm. It just lasted too darn long. You know, that planned obsolescence, which is what they talked about in the 50s and 60s with cars, how you've got to buy a new car every 3 years because the one you have is all worn out. Maybe you haven't driven it much, but it's all falling apart, including those seats, the upholstery. And so he rejected it because it was just too darn good. And you might think, if you think of hemp rope, that'd be rough to sit on. No, they can make it smooth.
Right.
Some of us you can buy certain things that aren't produced in Michigan. Hemp for bags, packing bags that you carry, luggage. And it's very rugged, very long-lasting. They used it on boats for years, the old sailing ships. They had hemp ropes. Why? Because rain, sun, salt spray, it lasted. It was very rugged. And, we're missing out on another industry here, which, Michigan's got fields. We could be growing hemp. And, I know there's issues with drug use and abuse and so on. But we need to come to some appropriate realization about that.
Yeah. Just a really weird question. Do you know why Ford would go to South Dakota or North Dakota as opposed to Michigan?
I don't know. Maybe there was already a hemp farm there. Again, that was before it was illegal.
Right.
But so he just bought the rights to its exclusive crop for a while.
Sense. Okay.
They were already probably growing it, No, I don't know why it wasn't Michigan. Ford tried that other thing, too, which I just read about. There's a book on it of developing a whole area of South America. And it wasn't an assembly plant. Were they doing rubber or something? Well, it's very fascinating. It totally failed. He was trying to develop an ideal community, a factory plant down in South America, and it was just there was corruption, and he didn't know the native culture, and all the usual problems with Western imperialism and exploitation of the poor. It was ahead of its time. Rather than shipping all the jobs to Mexico, he was trying to develop this facility, and I think it was just for a single, it wasn't to build cars per se, it was for rubber or something like that, and it just
one element of the entire manufacturing.
Just one of those utopian or great business ideas that maybe it was ahead of its time, or just wrong, downright wrong.
Well, that's one of the few things that weren't successful, it would seem.
Yeah. Okay, moving on with our stories. Waiting for a phone call here from a guest, and we'll move on until we get that. Just a small aside, I see, and I guess this hit the big news, the commercial stations, which I don't, because I only listen to WHFR.
Right.
And other non-commercial stations in Detroit, like WDET and so on, that late last week, Bruce Springsteen took the stage, musical performance at a sports arena north of Detroit. We can only guess which one of the two might have been. Probably DTE. Is Auburn Hills Palace?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be the only way.
Probably was the Palace. And he greeted his Michigan audience with a cheerful, "Hello, Ohio."
Oh, no.
And he made several more references to Ohio, the Buckeye State.
Oh, no.
And then a bandmate whispered a location correction to him, and then he apologized to the Michiganders. And they say his timing was ironic because of this is the football connection. Apparently Ohio State game, ancient rivals, will play tomorrow.
Tomorrow at noon.
In Ann Arbor.
Ann Arbor,
too much traffic in and out, folks. Stay away if you're trying to go shopping there or something. I'm sorry. But Springsteen's confusion, they say, seemed to underscore the current malaise affecting the Great Lakes state. That's right. That's Michigan. Nobody knows us.
Right.
What
right.
are we? Who are we? Where are we? You know, we're the most obese. We're the most underemployed, or the most out of work anyway.
We have homeless.
The most homeless in Detroit. All these reasons to not think about us, maybe. And of course, the U of M Ann Arbor team has not been doing well. Dropped all these games. The coach who was just there, I guess.
This is his second.
Second year, Rodriguez, has stated that hey, we win more games. We had better players. That's pretty.
A firm grasp of the obvious, right?
Yeah, pretty.
Maybe better coaching, too, huh?
But pretty in, you know, it raises hackles of all the fans, certainly. And then there was comments that he, last year, had overworked his players, maybe because they weren't performing well enough. And now they're investigating that, and it turns out all the records of those hours of training have disappeared. I know that was on the major news
in
Detroit.
Isn't that a coincidence? Sure.
Yeah, so we wish everybody a great fun time tomorrow. And remember, the outcome of sports event is not life or death. These other issues that we cover usually are, but shame on you, Bruce. Okay, I may not ever buy another album since I already have 30 or 40 of yours already.
but I won't call you the boss to your face.
No,
that?
No, come on. You know Michigan. We're the heart of rock and roll, as somebody said
Jersey
years
too.
Ago. I know.
So,
he was probably thrown off because Bob Seger wasn't in the audience.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You don't
friends.
See Bob
yes.
there. Yeah. Well, let's see, segues. Chamber check in Section C of the Dearborn Press and Guide this week. They're suggesting that the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, well, they'd like you to buy local. Why? Because they are the vendors. Okay, Chamber of Commerce, the businesses of Dearborn would like you to remember there are still businesses in Dearborn. In fact, I just saw the other day, of course, I can't remember where it is now, but a really unique store, and I think it's in Dearborn, a skateboard store.
Really?
Yeah, they specialize in skateboards. They're just west of Telegraph, which is still Dearborn, isn't it, on Michigan Avenue?
Sure is. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just west, yep.
Near the bike shop, the Schwinn bike shop, Jack's bike shop over there. Mm-hmm. It's an all skateboard. I mean, you can buy skateboards and all kinds and all the accessories. So if you're into skateboarding as a sport or as a recreational activity, there's actually a store, which is technically in Dearborn, and it looks real cool. I mean, it's really heavily developed and all kinds of merchandise stuffed inside. Sort of like our friends at Green Brain Comics on the east side of Detroit. We've got one of the best comic stores, widest variety, right here in Dearborn. And the Chamber knows that. And they're suggesting Jennifer Not Gehring. She really is Gehring, but that's her name.
She's not Gehring.
Yeah, she's not Gehring. She's not Gehring, but she is Gehring. Okay.
Is that K-N-O-T?
Yes, it's K-N-O-T-T, I believe.
Right.
Anyway, she says the Chamber will help you with your Christmas shopping. So if you're looking for certain kinds of things and you want to support local merchants, you know, local vendors, not necessarily chain stores or where the money might go to China or something, maybe even made in Michigan products might be at a lot of these local stores, more likely than maybe Walmart anyway. You can call up the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce. Look them up. They're in the Bryant Library. You could go by over there. They're in the main floor of the Bryant Public Library on Michigan Avenue, and they're willing to help you find local vendors in Dearborn for that. So we're still staring at the phone to see if it's going to ring. Ring, phone, ring. We're doing is there a phone ring a rain dance at Native Americans? No, they didn't have phones.
No, but we can visualize.
Okay.
In 5 minutes, we can pretend.
And you might say, what's that story doing on the same chamber check page about the Dearborn Fire Department at the last Dearborn Farmers Market? That was almost a month or more ago. Well, that's a make good. That's a makeup. That's a correction, in fact. And beautiful pictures on the first page of Section C and inside, too. It was because they originally, the Press and Guide, shame on them, had said it was the Trenton Fire Department that was going to be there. And then they didn't even mention our Henry Ford Community College fire curriculum, fire prevention, fire... firefighter training curriculum that we have here, Shannon Brulee, that we interviewed actually live while they were out there on WHFR.FM. See, we keep up with local. But the paper had to make good, and they really did. It was a lovely story. And the Dearborn Fire Department was out there with their Sparky the Dog mascot, somebody in a costume, and so on. And it was great local support for a local farm market, and we hope that comes back next year. But that was actually a make good. If you're wondering why, well, it seems like old news, folks, but they had to sort of straighten things out and give credit where credit was due, again, to local volunteers. Okay. Well, I've I've got two people staring at the phone. I don't have to then. And let's see, I can jump from some, the Severstall thing. Severstall seed money it has been promised $8.5 million towards that $20 or $26 million for the new conference center if it happens at Fairlane Town Center. But Severstall's had a PR problem that was caught in my neighborhood, the Springwells Park neighborhood. They had some maintenance that had to be done on something in their steel mill. And it started on the 12th. Of November, and it's going to go for a couple more weeks, maybe to the 26th, which is Thanksgiving Day. So if you live on the east side of Dearborn, folks, and you wonder what the constant roar is, it sounds like a large train, a locomotive with a lot of train cars rolling at high speed right in front of your house, and there isn't even a track in front of my house. Okay, think of Rotunda and Greenfield, that intersection. Okay, it's so loud there that our neighborhood president called up Severstall. Apparently, probably called the city of Dearborn. What the heck is going on? Mm-hmm. Why the noise? Why is it so loud during the day? Constantly, too. They're doing some cleaning, some maintenance, and it's a worrying mechanical noise so loud, luckily it's not at night, that it was concerned, like, what's happening? Are we all going to blow up or die or something? And Severstall did the right thing, though. They sent two reps to our own association meeting, neighborhood meeting, last Wednesday, 2 days ago, to explain. But you'd think they would have maybe tried to advise people in advance about this, although apparently it was sort of an emergency repair, and it doesn't usually happen, but amazing, the noise level over there during the day. And I thought they rerouted the train to some new tracks or onto the highway or something, a new development, trains on the highway. I mean, I didn't know. It was so loud. It was just like that. So Severstall did the right thing, and I guess they had no option here. They had to do the repair.
But what's the time frame?
Again, it should be done by Thanksgiving, but maybe not. Not that many people have Thanksgiving outdoors, you know, but
not anymore.
Inside it won't be quite as noisy.
What do you mean, not anymore?
I'm going back a ways.
Oh, okay.
Wait, like pilgrims?
Our first
yeah.
Wow, yeah. Not, went to that first one.
I wasn't
said,
around, but
the teepees weren't big enough for the for the banquet, so they
outside.
Yeah,
it probably wasn't in November then either.
They need that conference center in Dearborn quick.
I think it was in November. It was this harvest thing, the last harvest of the year, the wheat, the corn came in, and that's when they partied. Although it's interesting, Dennis, it might not have been the third week in November historically. We'll get that back to you next week on Black Friday.
I promise it wasn't a Thursday.
Yeah. Okay, looking at our stories here, what else can I tell our listeners that we haven't talked about yet? Here's one. I'd like to interview this person. Did you know that Dearborn has, in Dearborn government, there's a sustainability coordinator?
Oh, yeah.
Now, we all love sustainability.
The old SC.
For example, when I wake up in the morning, I'm glad I'm still alive. That's sustainability to a senior citizen. Okay. But the city of Dearborn has this person by the name of David Norwood. And there's a story in the Press and Guide from Wednesday that said Dearborn was invited to participate in a national sustainability conference. And that was in Chicago, September 23rd to 25. Now, they only sustained the conference for 3 days. But, hey, apparently a lot of cities wanted to know about Dearborn and a lot of our green efforts. For example, it's known, perhaps worldwide, that we have the largest green roof on any business, I think, in the world. And that's the Ford Motor Company. They have taken one of their flat roofs, which is typical of 50s and 60s architecture, and put down soil and planted stuff, grass and, I don't know, sunflowers, whatever they planted. And, of course, that's great insulation, and it helps to any sort of plant growing, cleans the air. But it's fantastic insulation to have a forest on your roof.
Where is this?
A Ford Motor Company, and I don't know which headquarters building, but it's somewhere by the central headquarters there. One of those, not the tower, I don't think, although maybe
there are trees up there.
There are trees on the roof, but that used to be Henry Ford II's penthouse, and he had some just decorative trees planted there and flowers and so on. That's why they invited Dearborn. But in fact, I don't know how many other sustainability projects we're known for nationally, but we were invited to it, and there he is. That's his name, and so maybe we'll have him on the show sometime in the future. David Norwood is Dearborn Sustainability Coordinator, and working, I think, with the economic development guy, Brian Murray, and so on, to reduce the cost for businesses and to clean things up here in Dearborn. Great concept. Wonderful. I didn't know we had a sustainability coordinator, and now he's been to a national conference, so there's no holding back, I guess, you know. although I think probably we're not as far along as we should be in that regard, which is one reason he was hired. Mayor, we mentioned when we interviewed all of the challengers for the Dearborn City Council position, and one of them got the journal bump and got elected. O'Donnell got elected, who was a challenger. We asked all of them, I think I did anyway, what about, you know, it was Mayor O'Reilly's idea, if we get some money up front, what about the generating our own electricity through new technology for turbine plants right here in Dearborn? And, of course, the question is, how do you power them? Wind turbine. It's wind turbine plants.
But you did ask that of each one of them.
General electricity. And all of them, but, you know, I wonder if that's something that will eventually come under David Norwood. So something to ask about in the future, and we'll look into that and maybe get him on the show here. Okay. Well, our phone hasn't rung yet.
And our update is the press secretary has said she is contacting Dylan to call
in. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see. Otherwise, we'll hold a grudge. No, not much, but we're just a little college station, but our listeners want to know, and they will be offended. And some of our listeners are in Dearborn Heights, his district. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, here's something that happened nationally, and this has to do with the, and I know we don't normally cover national issues, but I've mentioned Representative Ron Paul before because of his libertarian beliefs. He ran for a Republican presidential nomination, didn't win, never got a fair shake to express himself. But he has a lot of supporters. His current, you might say, campaign is called the Campaign for Liberty, and he has a lot of people from that political campaign that are still working for him, especially in Michigan, very active group. And I know I've talked to a couple of them on this show at different times. But this is amazing. The House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., just yesterday, did vote to let Congress carry out a sweeping new oversight of the central bank, that is the Fed, as it's called, Federal Reserve, all their policy decisions and operations. Right now, believe it or not, folks, the Federal Reserve has no oversight from anybody. Okay? Not required. No auditing. You know, what happened to the dollars? No oversight. Now, the reason for that, we have to give both sides on this, is that, and the Fed says, of course they say this, they don't want any oversight. They want to be able to do whatever they want to do, which is the best thing for the country at the time. So even if raising an interest rate on borrowing is unpopular, they wouldn't have Congress, those people looking out for their jobs, on their backs. They could do the objective thing that's right. Well, what the heck happened with our disaster in 2008, economic disaster? They needed some regulating. They needed some auditing. So I just want to say that, in fact, Ron Paul, he's a representative from Texas to the House of Representatives, he's introduced this bill in every session since he got there in 1980, and only now has he gotten enough support from Democrats and Republicans to get it past the House. Will it pass the Senate? Will it be signed by Obama? You know, I think the tenor of the times is that maybe they need some regulation. But it's kind of interesting that a Republican would actually have a bill, and it would get support from other Republicans for regulation of the Fed. And really, though, if you've got to know, folks, this is Ron Paul's first step, though, to eliminate the Federal Reserve. He's totally against it, and that's his current book, End the Fed. And the Fed, and you can read about it and see what his point of view is. This guy is, and I'm an equal opportunity supporter of great ideas and people that are intelligent. His books are very smart about economics. That here is a former baby doctor. That's what he was, a medical doctor, delivered babies, okay? Thousands of babies that he's delivered before he went into politics. But now his baby, this bill, has been finally passed by the House, and I think almost everybody, progressive to conservative Republican, sees the value of getting some oversight on the Federal Reserve since it's already not been serving us very well. So if you want to read the full argument, though, on this, then you definitely should read the book, Ron Paul and the Fed. We're going to answer the phone here. Talk among yourselves, folks.
Well, do you know what I was looking at that I thought was just kind of a feel-good story in the Times Herald? Is that the Dearborn Historical Museum is reopening. I mean, it's the oldest house built in the Dearborn Township, and they have like this half-page picture. God bless them, but you can't see really any of the house. But you see all the folks that helped to donate.
Were they all in there when they reopened it?
I think they were.
She was in the, I'm sorry, here's.
And they've got, you know, they did this with many of the contributions. Oh, I think we've got a guest.
Yes, we're going to go to our phone call from House Majority Leader Andy Dillon from Dearborn Heights District. So, Representative Dillon, you're there, yes? You can hear me? Okay, very good. Okay, I'm with our two volunteer news persons on the staff, Dennis and Amy also. Amy, start asking these tough questions about the current situation of education funding.
Well, shall we jump right in? In October, Governor Granholm did a line item veto on the 20J funding. Can you tell us, Speaker Dillon, exactly what is the 20J funding and how does it affect the Hold Harmless districts?
Yeah, 20J is a provision in the School Aid Act, the Funding Act, that was put in place back in the late 1990s. And there's about 30 school districts throughout the state that receive an additional payment over and above the base foundation allowance. Unfortunately, I happen to represent two of those districts, one being Dearborn and the other Livonia. And those were the two most severely hit school districts in the state. So it's about a $50 million cost to the state each year for these districts that historically had a higher millage and paid a little more in revenues, and it was a way for the state under the existing school aid formula to get them some of the money that they invest back.
So what's the status of the funding now?
Well, we passed in the House a bill to restore half of that we would use identify some revenues. In fact, in that bill, we didn't identify the specific revenues, but we in the House agreed to restore half of that, as well as put $25 million in the school districts that have the lowest funding formula to show some equity there for the lowest funded districts. So it's waiting action in the Senate right now.
Okay. I saw on the HouseDems.com site that dated November 5th, a headline that reads, House Dems restore $184 million to Michigan schools. $184 million seems like the magic figure left in the federal stimulus kitty, a.k.a. Obama bucks. Is that where the figure comes from? And how likely is this to pass the Senate and be signed by Governor Granholm?
Yeah, that's the money left over from the stimulus. And we were trying to hold some of it back to soften next year's blow. I mean, right now we think that the reduction in school aid could be as much as $500 per student. But when we did the budgets back in September, you know, Senator Bishop said, look, I don't want to raise revenues. I will not raise revenues under any circumstances. And I said, look, I'll agree with you to do these very difficult budgets, but you have to agree that you'll at least give some targeted revenues a fair chance in the Senate. So unfortunately, he hasn't done that yet. We've sent targeted revenues over, for example, freezing the personal exemption, which is slated to go up $100 this year, would raise about $55 million, and that provision alone would fund 20J or, you know, the lower school districts. So, you know, I'm hoping that here in December sometime that the Senate will agree to some of these targeted revenue increases, which even the Republicans say are not tax increases, so that, you know, we don't have these problems with the school budget. And to do this in the middle of the school year is not very fair to our school districts.
And Speaker Dillon, this is Jay again. Aren't the taxpayers of Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, the so-called richer districts that voted to fund their schools more, they're already paying in this extra amount to the state? And it seems to me that it's not fair to cut off the money coming back. Don't you think that, or at least in answer to this, I mean, I'm all in favor of, like, equal funding for all the education of the children of the state. But the richer districts are already collecting and giving the state this money. Don't you think it should be phased out over, I don't know, a couple of years at least, if it's going to be ended?
Absolutely, it should be phased out. And even people that don't agree with the 20J payment, and virtually every 20J district already receives more than the base foundation. So there is some argument to justify eliminating this, but eliminating it in a 2 weeks' notice is completely unfair. And even those that oppose 20J funding would argue that that should be phased in over time. So, yes, I agree with you on that.
Well, you know, of course, in these difficult economic times, let me just finish with this tough question, because we're looking at the future. We had one of our local activists from the PTSA group here on the show earlier today talking with us. We're worried about future funding and secure funding for education, too, that... If there has to be increased revenues coming from somewhere, what could you support? I mean, Michael Moore, the famous filmmaker, last week in Traverse City wrote an editorial about just getting back to the graduated income tax we had before Engler. I mean, he thinks that, and it's a graduated tax, which means the people who make more money would have to pay more. But we already, we survived that pretty well. That was like, 10 years ago? And it's not there now. Is that something that seems fair to you? Or is there any other revenue sources you can think of for the future? And that's our final question. But
sure. I don't believe that we did have a graduated income tax. Under Engler, our income tax is 4.6. And until 2 years ago, it was reduced to 3.9, and then we brought it back up to 4.35. But our Constitution prohibits the graduated income tax. So to get the graduated income tax...
Oh, okay. Well, it couldn't have been then, yeah.
We have to go to the voters.
Yeah.
However, about a year ago, I went to the business groups because I saw this problem. Our general fund has contracted from $9.8 billion in the year 2002 to less than $7 billion this year. So I went to Detroit Renaissance and asked them if they would help engage in tax reform in the state, because unless we really reform our tax system, we're never going to have the revenues we need to fund the priorities of the state. So fortunately, they engaged and have a plan which talks about expanding the sales tax to services.
Mm-hmm.
And now what I'm asking is that the schools and the hospitals and the cities that have all been severely impacted by these budgets, that they work with what was Detroit Renaissance, is now Business Leaders for Michigan. And let's build a coalition, because I believe, and the reason I went to them in the first place, is it's going to be very difficult for the legislature just to willy-nilly do a massive reform to the tax code. Now, we may be in such a desperate fiscal strait next year that we do it, but I'd much rather have a consensus and a coalition built around, you know, a well-thought-out tax reform measure for the state.
And if there happens to be a constitutional convention, that's still a year or two away and has to be voted on by the people of Michigan, that, of course, could put in some solid new reforms about taxing and so on. But that's almost too long to wait, isn't it?
I think it is. I had dinner with Senator Bishop and the governor on Tuesday night. And, you know, I said, I don't know how, you know, we're going to get a budget done next year, especially when we get into the campaign. So I said, I think we should try to have it all done by the end of March, and then, you know, we can get into the campaign season.
Now, there's a radical idea.
We don't have a very good track record of meeting our deadline.
No, that's been one of the number one criticisms down here from the other media anyway. Well, thank you for giving us your time today to speak on this. We understand the next time anybody can really talk about this is going to be after Thanksgiving up there in Lansing. Is that right, the next time that a session starts up?
Well, we have committee hearings going this week. And
okay.
I presume there's some next week, but you're right. We won't be in active voting session until the week after
Thanksgiving. Well, the best of luck on this. We're going to try to get someone from Senator Bishop's office to talk to us, too, and give us their side and update maybe next week. If not Black Friday, then after next week. Thank you very much, and we'll be talking to you again. Thanks for all of your work up there in Lansing.
Great. Thanks, Jake.
Appreciate it.
And what was the other one?
It was Amy and Dennis. Or
Amy and Dennis. All right, great. Thanks.
Say goodbye, Dennis.
Bye, Dennis.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, that was our interview, and they got a little behind up there. I hope that means that Representative Dillon was hard at work even on a Friday in Lansing, when we know that most people just up and leave. I didn't ask him where he was. I thought that was impolite, perhaps, to ask him if he was physically out on a lake somewhere fishing or I don't know, whatever. But
we still believe talk politics on the lake.
That's right. You still know what's going on. And there are some committee meetings next week. So keep the pressure on them, folks. This is all we have time for on the journal today, the new WHFR journal. We will be here on Black Friday. And we will talk about Buy Nothing Day. And so before you buy something next Friday, maybe you should listen to this show. And then, in fact, it'll be too late to catch the sales anyway. Only buy what you need. Take care of each other. Remember the neediest, which might be yourself. And we'll be back again, though, next Friday live here at the new WHFR Journal. It's the WHFR Dearborn. Coming up next is Highway 61, the best in blues, with Joanne Korchinska. So stay tuned for that, and goodbye for now.